Hey guys, Dirt here, and we're doing something a little different with this audio version of the podcast. We had some issues with the stream this morning, and there was some bad audio at the beginning, and it cleared up after a couple minutes, but instead of making you sit through that bad audio, I wanted to go ahead and jump in here into the actual audio recording and redo the introduction so you didn't have to listen to all that garbage. If you listen on YouTube, it's still choppy, and I can't really do anything about that, but I figured for the audio feed, I'd at least give you a clean introduction until it gets to the point where it cleaned up the audio, and then we'll just jump right back into the regular stream. So you might hear a little audio difference there, but that's why. But basically, one of the things we were talking about this morning on the show when we got started was the Last Jedi teaser trailer that came out this weekend at Star Wars Celebration. And the title Last Jedi has been bothering people for a long time. So we're going to talk about some stuff in the trailer, but first I wanted to talk about the title itself, because a lot of people have problems figuring out Last Jedi, because Jedi is, it can be singular or it can be plural. And dealing with language is a very difficult thing, especially when you're dealing with a word that can be taken different ways in the English language. Unlike the way things can work in other languages. I took a couple years of Latin when I was in high school. I don't want to... I hate foreign languages. Nonetheless, in Latin and the Romantic languages, most of them that are still more the European-based, not English so much, there are different versions of words depending on male or female, singular or plural, which actually means that there are up to six versions of the same word, depending on how you're using it in a sentence. For instance, we know in English, Jedi, as we talk about it in Star Wars, could be singular or plural. You say, hey, look at that dude, he's a Jedi. And so you mean one. But you say, hey, look at that group over there, they are Jedi. You're using the same word, Jedi. It can mean singular, it can mean plural, it doesn't make any difference. Now, if we say something like child, you know, hey, look at that child. But if you see a group of them, you don't say, hey, look at those child. You say, hey, look at those children. You change the word a little bit, put a different ending on it to signify multiple. In Latin and a lot of those Romantic languages still, they not only have that singular and plural difference, but there's also a difference on whether you're talking about male or female or a third category, which is neither or both. So for instance, if you took a word like child in Latin, you would end it one way if you meant a boy child, a different way if you meant boy children, a different way for girl child, a different way for girl children, and a different way for non-gender specific children or child or children. So if you looked at a child and you like you didn't know if it was a boy or a girl, whatever, or you just say, I need a kid to stand over there, you would use the term that meant male or female because you didn't really care if it was male or female. Or if there's a group and they're all mixed, you know, male and female, then you would use the plural. So six versions of the same word depending on how you're using it. And so for The Last Jedi, translated into Portuguese and Italian and French and, you know, whatever, Spanish, they always use the plural version. So it's always meant the last group of Jedi or the last class of Jedi, the last team of Jedi or, you know, whatever. So Luke is standing here saying that the Jedi have to end, but he's also training Rey in the trailer. So he's training Rey to become a Jedi. So she'll be another Force user, but he's also saying the Jedi have to end. The Jedi are going to go away. And I mean, it really doesn't make a lot of sense for people. They're looking at it going like, what? You know, what does this mean? So I think I get the idea of what they're going to be grasping at here. And I'm going to go for another reference here that I think will help get the point across to people, you know, having a hard time understanding this. So take a look at this. Green Lantern and Sinestro. Now, let's think of Green Lantern and Sinestro as the light side and dark side of the Force. Okay? So you got Green Lantern, he's the good guy, he's the light side. Sinestro is the bad guy, the yellow side, the dark side. And we know that they fight and go back and forth. And for the longest time, that's all we knew of the Green Lanterns, right? It was green was good, yellow was bad, and they both had a weakness to each other, and we couldn't really explain why, but that's just what the rules were. But then something happened in the Green Lantern universe, and we got the whole emotional spectrum, and we found out there's a lot more than just green and yellow. Red, orange, blue, indigo, violet, black, all of these different emotions had their own rings and their own ability to tap into this energy in the universe. And so the idea of the whole lantern landscape just fractured and broke apart. You had all these different points. So think about force users. Force users, we tend to think, you know, in terms of Star Wars, you've got the good guys who are holy and helpful. They're kind of like priests, but they still fight. And then you've got the dark side, which are evil, power hungry. It's almost kind of like a blue versus red in that spectrum. But through over the years, as things have changed with DC Comics and playing with that emotional spectrum, they actually added another character who was the white. And he was a mix of all the colors coming together. It's Kyle Rayner, who was Green Lantern in the 90s. He became this white energy, Ion, they called him for a while. He became the white energy part of the Green Lantern spectrum. And the idea was he could tap into all of the different colors and all the different powers. So this one guy, this one type of lantern had the ability to grab all these other colors and weave them together. So let's bring this all back. What does this have to do with Star Wars and The Last Jedi? Well, maybe, and this is just speculation, this is just a theory, a movie theory, but a lot of people have actually been trending this on Twitter and whatnot. This is one of those prevailing things. They think that the idea is that Luke, instead of being a Jedi or a Sith, a good guy or a bad guy, he wants to be one of these guys who can tap into all of the Force powers. So it's no longer about good and bad. It's just about tapping into this energy and using the energy, however. And so the Green Lantern Corps is the easiest way I can think of breaking up the Force powers and then making this one who can use them all together at one time. Now, to add to that, you may say, okay, well, that's, I mean, an interesting idea, but what is there really to back that up? And there's actually a couple things. One thing we saw in the trailer, books. That's right. If you look real close, there's a shot in the trailer of books sitting on a shelf, actual paper. Now, this is a big deal, because think about all you've seen of Star Wars over the years. You've seen data pads, you've seen data disks, you've seen message transmissions, all of these coded reports and holograms and whatever, but you've never actually seen paper. And so paper being in the Star Wars universe probably means it's really, really old. Now, even though Star Wars is not the future, it's a galaxy a long time ago, when there were knights who got into fights using sabers of lights, paper is something that's gone away. But yet, here it is in the Force Awakens trailer. And not only that, but if you look, one of the pages they actually show, you can see that there's binding along the edge. And you can see right here in the middle, and I'll use this hand actually because this is where the screen is, but right here in the middle is the symbol of the Force. We see that. Now, sometimes people say it's the Jedi symbol, but technically it's really the symbol of the Force. The Force being this energy. And when you look at the poster for The Last Jedi, in fact, they're holding the saber. There's like the silhouette holding the saber, and it's making that symbol coming off of it. So there are these books talking about old Force powers, and it's the pre-digital age. So here's where it comes back to. In an early draft of Star Wars that came from George Lucas, he talked about a group known as the Wills. W-H-I-L-L-S. The Wills. And I kind of hate the fact that he took a word that already existed and then, you know, just lettered it, you know, to try to make it into his thing instead of something else. That's a little too much of Sleazebag Anno guy and the death sticks that he was selling. Sleazebag Anno. Yeah, he's a sleazebag. Got it. He sells death sticks. Oh, we're talking drugs and cigarettes. Can you hit it over the head any harder? It's just, you know, a little preachy. Nonetheless, here we've got the Wills coming back. And the Wills were the group of Force users before the Jedi. And they were the ones that tapped into the entire spectrum. So we've got these ancient books. We've got Force users. We've got the ending of the Jedi. It looks like the real balance of the Force here that's coming full circle was not the Anakin turning evil, killed all the Jedi, and now there's only a couple Jedi and a couple Sith guys, and they're going to go at it for the rest of the time. The full balance of everything coming full circle of the prophecy is actually restoring the Jedi to their full circle-ness, to being users that just tap into the Force, whether good or bad or whatever. They are just emotional power users in the Star Wars universe. Of course, that's just a theory, just a movie theory. But nonetheless, that seems to be one of the prevailing things that's going on. One other thing that I think is interesting is we finally got this scene of Luke and R2 looking at the devastation. And this was actually hinted at in the trailer for The Force Awakens, where you saw Luke's cyborg hand come down and touch R2-D2. And that's actually from this scene. And we didn't actually get that scene in the movie. We kind of quickly got a glimpse of it when Rey picks up the lightsaber and all the stuff explodes in her head. But here we're actually finally getting that shot. So interesting that all of that is coming back together. Now, like I said, we don't have any proof of this yet, and we won't until it actually comes out. But it's looking pretty good at this point that's something that's happening there. One of the other big things that came out at Star Wars Celebration, where the trailer got dropped, was also Star Wars Battlefront 2. We got the notification that is actually coming out, and it's going to have multiplayer that spans all eras. So it's going to have prequel era. You're going to have your Qui-Gon Jinns and your Darth Mauls and those type characters and places. It's going to have your original trilogy eras that we've all, Endor and Hoth and all that stuff that we've played a million times in the last game. And then it's also going to have the, as you can see here, Force Awakens era, the New Order, and all of those characters. Rey is going to be in it. Everybody, Darth. Kylo Ren. Yeah, but he's got some Darth name, right? Doesn't he? I'm sure there's one somewhere. Someone probably come up with Darth Big Nose or something. I don't know. But anyway, okay, we're getting a new, Battlefront game. That's fantastic. I was a little disappointed in the last one, to be honest with you, because I like single player. I don't want everything to be an online multiplayer game. And in fact, I like playing with bots. I just like turning it on, two teams full of bots and just running around shooting stuff. I find that more fun than getting schooled by 12-year-olds on Xbox Live and then call me horrible racist names over Xbox Live chat, because that's what 12-year-olds do nowadays.
Sadly.
Anyway, but the neat thing is that they announced that there is, in fact, a single-player mission. This whole campaign, you're going to be playing as this character, a female elite trooper, and you're there when the Death Star explodes over Endor, and you're going to be following her watching the collapse of the Empire and, I guess, the rise of the First Order and that transition, whatever. But you've actually got storyline points that you get to follow. So that I'm excited about that because I want to play the storyline stuff and I like not having everything being multiplayer online. The other cool thing is that if you guys remember back in the day when Battlefront was on PS2 and PSP and Xbox and all of that type of stuff, there was also another aspect to the game that was missing from this more recent remake, and that was space battles. And space battles are finally back. Now, I don't know if they're going to be handled the way they were on the newer versions of the game, where you would be in the X-Wing and then you could actually land inside a Star Destroyer and jump out and attack stuff and jump back in and fly off. Or if it's going to be like the PSP versions where it's you're in space for some and then you're, you know, on the ground for others. They haven't made that clear yet, but at least it's coming back. So that is nice that we're at least getting back to that. So we're getting our single player campaign back and we're getting our space battles back. I'm happy about that. I don't know if you guys are, but that at least makes me happy. So that was the other big thing that came out from Star Wars Celebration is that trailer and the details that it's probably a game worth getting again. The only problem is you want the regular version of the game, it's $59.99. The deluxe version of the game is $79.99. The one nice thing, though, is we have EA Access. If you have EA Access, you get a bit of a discount. I think it's $71.99 for the deluxe or $53.99. So you get a little bit of a price break if you order it digitally, you know, through your storefront and you've got EA Access. But, I mean, it's like, come on. That's still a lot for games. I'm sorry. You know what I know? I'm kind of cheap. But still, $60 for a game. That's a lot. All right, so moving on beyond Star Wars stuff. What else can we talk to? Let's quickly jump. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but we're quickly going to jump to Superwoman. And some of you may be wondering, like, what's the big deal with Superwoman? I don't get it. Well, this is one of the books in the current Superman family that they tried to wedge into continuity and make it pretend like it's a key part of the storyline, and it's really not. But the interesting thing was the New 52 Superman. Everybody remembers there was something different about him. It was different history. They rebooted the character. Wasn't quite as powerful as he was before, but he was dating Wonder Woman, and then he got these burst powers where he would, you know, all his cells would overload and shoot out all this energy. And then after, you know, a while of this, he actually died. And he, like, poof, in a blaze of ashes and went away. And Lana Lang, his best friend, and Lois Lane were both standing there at the moment of his death when he poofed and the power went out and they both got powers and became Superwoman. Then Lois Lane died, and so Lana Lang was the only one left with the powers, and she took over the mantle of Superwoman. Okay, great. What does that have to do with anything? Well, here's the problem. They recently did a story in Superman called Superman Reborn. It's part of the rebirth. And in that, the character of Superman from the 1990s, who was in a parallel universe, who got pulled into the New 52, who was living not as Superman, saw Superman die. He took over the mantle of Superman. But then it turns out Mr. However you pronounce his name, he was masquerading as Clark Kent for a long time. And then it turned out he created like this other universe where Superman was going to have to fight for himself. And Superman technically had been split in two by some sort of other world entity, which we believe to be Dr. Manhattan from The Watchmen, which is another thing that Rebirth got into and then wandered away from and now looks like it's going back to. And so part of the character of Superman was the New 52 version that died, and part was the old version from the 90s, and the two squished back together into one, and history was rewritten, and the New 52 Superman never existed. So here's the thing. If the new Superman from the New 52 never existed, then how did Superwoman get her powers? Because she got her powers when Superman died, and he poofed, and she got bathed in the electromagnetic forces and then became a Superwoman. How did she get those powers if there was no Superman to die and give them to her in the first place? No one knows. I mean, honestly, no one knows. Phil Jimenez, who's been writing the story, was actually asked this on Twitter. You know, like, how does this play into her story? And his answer was, quite frankly, I mean, that's how it was spelled out. In fact, he's going to be leaving the book now, and someone else is taking over the writing duties on the book because he's kind of upset that everything that he was writing now may be potentially retconned completely out of existence and the character may be reworked in some way. Nothing that he wrote technically stands. So the question is, where do we go in the future with Superwoman? And there is this alternate cover, kind of haunting here, of Superman actually riding the tombstone Hero, here lies Superwoman with his heat vision. So is the character just going to die and go away because she doesn't exist anymore in the universe? Maybe. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. The other thing I read here in the last couple days, I actually got to read an advanced copy of Secret Empire Zero. Comes out this week. Secret Empire is the new Marvel crossover thing. This is going to be the last one. Marvel says this is the last one they're doing for 18 months with a big, massive company-wide crossover. It said a lot of people are fatigued by all these constant crossovers. That doesn't mean they're going to get rid of all crossovers. You might still see them within a family of books. You might see, all the Avengers books do some sort of crossover. All the Spider-Man books do some sort of crossover, but not company line-wide. But I got to sit down and read a digital preview copy of Secret Empire Zero. And it feels a lot like Secret Invasion. Honestly, it does. If you read Secret Invasion, where you found out that shape-shifting Skrulls had been all over the Avengers and in S.H.I.E.L.D. and everywhere, and then suddenly one day they all kind of and turn back into their alien forms and, take over, and, everybody has to fight back and stop them. Well, that's kind of what happens in Secret Empire. If you read Captain America Steve Rogers, number 16 comes out this week, read that first. I read that one also, but I'm not really a big reader into Captain America books. Nick Spencer has done a really great job of alienating all the long-term readers and has made a series that just kind of flops around and hasn't really been very good. But nonetheless, I read through it, and it basically leads up to Secret Empire, talking about Baron Zemo and Blackout and stuff they're doing to rewrite history, and Madame Hydra knowing Steve back in World War II and some of the stuff they went to and come back together in the modern time, and Steve getting the codes for the global shield that surrounds the Earth, and that leads into Secret Empire Zero, where he actually has this plan, and all of Hydra has been working in the background, make these plans, and the idea is to try to separate all the heroes of the Marvel Universe into different groups, and then once they're isolated into different groups, you can fight them in pockets or get rid of them here or chuck them out into space here or whatever, so then they are left on Earth and Hydra can take back over. And it's all right. But like I said, it really feels a lot like Secret Invasion. Secret Empire, Secret Invasion, not much of a leap between the two. Secret Empire is an old name, apparently, in the Marvel Universe that they're reusing for this crossover. But really, it just comes down to, that same thing you had in Secret Invasion, where someone you thought you trusted, like Maria Hill, suddenly, whoop, she's a Skrull shapeshifter. Spider-Woman, whoop, she's a Skrull shapeshifter. Someone you thought you could trust, whoop, and now they're evil and they're part of this evil plan. And you get a lot of that here, where it's like, oh, you thought you could trust this person, but they're actually working for Hydra, and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. If you're into that, if you've been reading the Captain America stuff, then, I mean, by all means, follow up with it. If you have not been reading the Captain America books, if you're like most people buying comics who are like, no, and haven't been buying this stuff, it's probably going to cross over into something you read at some point, but honestly, I don't know that there's really going to be anything that you're going to feel like you're going to have to get into, because it doesn't seem all that great. We know that this is going to be the last one they're doing for a long time, because so many people have fatigue of these crossovers, and a lot of these crossovers have been pretty terrible the last couple of years. So I'm not giving it a high recommendation. When it comes out this week and people are coming into the store and they're asking, hey, should I buy this? I'm going to be like, probably not. And just kind of leave it at that, because I just don't see any real big draw to it. Again, it's okay. I'm not going to say it's the worst thing I've read of all time, but not being someone who hasn't been into the Captain America books, trying to get in to this Captain America book, it's just not that thrilling or engaging. It doesn't like pull me in like, oh my gosh, now I got to read all this stuff. It's just more like, yep, kind of feels familiar and been there before. So not a big deal on that. One last thing. I want to talk about here, wrap up the show here, that is Masters of the Universe Classics from Mattel. As we all know, Mattel has shut down their online store where Masters of the Universe Classics were being made. They've handed everything off to Super 7, and apparently they just have stores of these unsold figures left that they need to get rid of one way or another. And one of the first things we saw, of course, was they appeared on eBay. And for those of you who were buying the figures on eBay, they weren't terrible prices. They were, you know, somewhat lowered. Some of them were the same price they were finding them on MattyCollector.com. But the thing was, some of them that were more difficult to find, you were able to get now. And they also had the best offer thing on there. So, for instance, Laser Power He-Man Laser Light Skeletor, $60. Well, I kind of wanted that one just because I like all these different Skeletors that come out, but I didn't necessarily want to pay $60 for it. So I made an offer. I went in and I said, how about $45? And they accepted. So I got one. So it's just a neat little two-character box. For those of you unfamiliar with it, we'll just take a look. Oh, excuse me. Whoa. Shouldn't have had beans for breakfast. But as you can see, just this nice little box, Laser Power He-Man, Laser Light Skeletor. I don't know, just kind of an interesting... I'm not a big fan of the Laser Power He-Man. His face looks like John Davidson, who was a game show host in the 70s. Kind of funky looking gear. That Skeletor, though... probably going to be sending that off to Joe Amato to have a disco version made, have him painted up disco. He's got, I've got one of the intergalactic Skeletors that I sent to Joe that he's turning to disco, and I'll probably send this one along also. He-Man, I'll probably just leave the way he is, or I don't know, throw him up on my Castle Grayskull back there and just let him hang out. But nonetheless, I was like, okay, you know, not a bad deal. So I went ahead and picked up that. Well, then, as it turns out, people started noticing last week that the characters were showing up on the GameStop website. And so if you went to GameStop.com and you type in Masters of the Universe, you're finding a lot of characters for sale on there. You can see the first two listed here are the 12-inch ones, $75. Those are the big foot-tall figures. They're not the little 5.5 inch ones. They are the big ones, almost like a baby, like a child figures. But then they have a lot of the other ones. A lot of guys that were hard to find, San Diego exclusives, things like that, which, you know, kind of scratch your head. Like, I would have liked to have bought those a long time ago. And so, in fact, as I was digging through, I found Anti-Eternia He-Man. And this is one of those that I really wanted, actually, when it came out, but it was gone in a flash. Like, within minutes of the pre-buy for the subscribers, it was gone. But I always wanted one because I love these funky, recolored, redecoed figures. And he is black and red. He's like an evil version of He-Man from the German audiobooks. Never made it into the comics, the cartoons, never had an official release as a toy before. You can see they made it all red and black on the card. I'm actually going to rip them out here in a little bit, throw them up on the shelf. I just love funky color redecos. That's why I love Disco Skeletor so much. So the fact that I could find one on there, and it was like 30-some bucks. I don't want to say exactly because I'm not 100% sure. Nonetheless, though, it was a lot cheaper than going on eBay. Spending, you know, $50 trying to get them from some second-party website. But Mattel didn't have those on the eBay website in their store for sale. They just appeared on GameStop.com, which is, you know, really kind of awkward. Well, then, now, people have noticed that they've returned to Walmart.com. Sold by Mattel Incorporated. These are coming directly from Mattel. through Walmart.com, which Walmart has an open marketplace. Other stores can go in there and sell their stuff through Walmart.com. They've just made an online commerce marketplace. They're trying to build it. Best Buy does the same thing. And they just want people to come there and shop and look as opposed to going to Amazon or eBay. They're trying to make this digital storefront where people can come. And Mattel has listed their stuff. But not only has Mattel done that, but they actually lowered the prices on a lot of stuff. And if you look, for instance, it says reduced price right up there in the corner. And a lot of the figures are $16, $17. These are characters. It says list price $28. $28 is what they were selling for on the Maddie Collector website. $16.80. And a lot of them, you know, you can see the two-pack of the minis for $12, normally $20. $16.20 for Rio Blast. $16.80 for Buzzsaw Hordak. And a lot of pop characters. A lot of the Princess of Power She-Ra characters are on there, too. Now, if you look right in the middle of the screen, you can see that there's actually a Spirit of Hordak figure on here, $51.88. But he's actually being sold by ToyWiz.com, which is a toy retailer website. They're selling through the Mattel, or I'm sorry, through Walmart.com's marketplace, and they're still at the higher price. So, like, that's a figure I would like to have, is the Spirit of Hordak. I actually had one at one time. I bought it when it actually went on sale back in the day. I was able to find one because they would randomly throw it up. If you remember those days, just randomly you go to MattyCollector.com and he'd be there, and then, like, 20 minutes later, he's gone. Well, I found one time. I bought it, but then there was someone who really wanted one, and I was like, you know what? I'd rather it get to someone who really desperately wants it for their collection. So I sold it to him for what I paid for it. Didn't even make a profit on it. Now it's selling $51.88, ToyWiz through Walmart.com. But the other figures, all of the Mattel ones, Eldor, $16.20, Darius, $16.20, Sweet Bee, who is one of the Princess of Power figures, $16.20. The Giants. Here is the giant Skeletor figure, the one that we were looking at earlier on GameStop for $75 is on here for $45. So if you want that giant Skeletor, don't buy it through GameStop.com. Go to Walmart. But here's some of you thinking, okay, so what? They ran some specials on some different websites and they're getting rid of the stock. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is the whole reason that this collector's line was put together in the first place was because they said they couldn't sell them at retail. They said there's no way for Mattel to be able to make the figures and put them on store shelves and put them in Toys R Us and Kmart and Sears and wherever and throw them out there for people to pick up and buy. And so they had to do this collector's club, this online subscriber-only system to sign up and buy these figures through their website. And last year, they gave up. They finally said, we're done. And they sent everything over to Super 7. Super 7 can make toys that sell in Toys R Us. They make collector's toys that sell in comic book stores, that sell in Toys R Us, that sell online at Amazon, that sell through their digital storefront. They're able to do that with figures that aren't, say, Barbie or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or, you know, Star Wars, figures that you see everywhere. They're able to get these collector's figures on store shelves and into digital storefronts. And now that Mattel has given up on being able to do the Masters of the Universe line, they've put them everywhere. They've put them on eBay. They put them on Amazon. They put them on GameStop. They put them on Walmart. Now that they've given up on being able to do it, they're doing it. And they've given it to a company that can also do it in Super 7. And Super 7's like, even, hey, we don't have to focus on just the classics figures. We'll still make the classics, but we'll make the reaction figures, and we're going to make the muscle figures, and we're going to make, you know, a whole bunch of different types of figures. The vintage style 5.5 ones they're bringing back, they can do all of those. And you're going to see those in different places like comic shops and Amazon. And you may even see some show up at Toys R Us, even though Mattel could never make it happen. And here we are. So,
I think I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
What are you getting me for Christmas?
Not going to tell you.
Hmm. Is it a Masters of the Universe figure?
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah, well, we'll see. So anyway, it boggles the mind. It's one of those things like, how inept can one company be putting this stuff out there? But anyway, so that's it. So that's going to do it for The Weeknd Is Dead this week. I want to thank you guys for listening or tuning into the video here on YouTube. Thanks, everybody. Don't forget to check out popculturenetwork.com. Don't forget to check out ineedcomics.com, part of the Pop Culture Network. Check out the toy stuff at thatnewtoysmell.com, part of the Pop Culture Network. And if any of you feel like you really got you got a big heart, you want to do something to change someone's life, to make something seem, you know, just exciting and new and wonderful again in the world, go to tinyurl.com/forthegamers. That's the number four, for the gamers. There's a 12-year-old kid who just hit 100 subscribers doing his YouTube videos, and he'd like to get more. So if anyone can get in on that, you want to add yourself to that subscriber list and help this kid feel happy again, then make sure you jump on that and doing it. But that's going to do it for me, guys. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.